Okay, keep your eyes closed.
Okay.
I want to show you my first ever painting.
All right.
Okay. Open your eyes.
Oh, that's a lot of colors.
Mm-hmm.
And shades.
So be honest. What do you think?
Well, I like how if you switch to Geico, you could save hundreds of dollars on car insurance.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Yeah. Here, why don't I hold your paintbrush while you call them?
Geico, because saving 15% or more on car insurance is always a great answer.
Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Batman Report. We go live every Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time and check in on the world of golf to bring you the latest news, insights, analysis, interviews, recaps, previews. Hey, we cover anything and everything golf. My name is Carlos Torres, and every week, alongside my co-host, Fred Alvader. Fred, hi, how are you today?
Hey, Carlos. I think spring's finally gotten here in Toledo. It's really, really nice out here. But, you know, I got to spend a couple of days at one of my favorite spots last weekend, French Lick, Indiana, with historic golf resorts like the Greenbrier, Pinehurst, and Pebble Beach. They're normally at the top of every golfer's bucket list. Well, they really should consider adding French Lick. So many people just don't realize what is there. It's kind of out of the normal routine for people. You got to kind of want to go there, but I'll tell you what, it is worth a trip. But sitting atop the second highest peak in Indiana, the Pete Dye course is one of the most challenging courses a golfer will ever encounter. It offers miles of panoramic views from every hole in the course. The Donald Ross course is celebrating its 100th anniversary this season and is a classic design that rolls over the existing southern Indiana countryside and offers an exquisite golfing adventure. Plus, the West Bay and Springs Hotel, which first opened in 1904, and the French Lick Hotel and Casino offer the absolute finest in hospitality and service to please the most discerning traveler. Here's another good reason to visit French Lick this summer. You can see the future stars of the LPGA as well as past stars in 1 6-day period in July. The Sumatra Tour will be hosting the Donald Ross Centennial Classic Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, July 7th through the 9th. And then immediately after, the Legends Tour will be holding their first ever major championship, the Senior LPGA Legends Championship, on the Pete Dye course on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday of July 10th through 12th. Julie Engster, Nancy Lopez, Jan Stevenson, Laura Davies, and Michelle McGann are all scheduled to compete, and it should be a wonderful event to watch. But Carlos, let's get back to the real task at hand here. In current golf this week, Kevin Chappell finally broke through for his first win in Texas. New rules are coming in golf immediately. We're going to talk about those tonight. And it looks like Tiger may be hanging up the golf spikes for good after his latest back surgery. Let's talk some golf, Carlos.
Let's talk about it. And we have a lot to talk about. As usual, and our main topic today will be the LPGA and update on what's going on, what has happened so far this year on the Ladies Professional Golf Association Tour. So, but as usual, we start with our weekend backspin where Fred and I recap the weekend's action on the major tours, and like you mentioned, Kevin Chappell finally won it, so tell us all about it.
Well, you know, Robert Koepka put some heat on the eventual winner, Kevin Chappell, at the Valero Texas Open last weekend. He fired a final round 65. Koepka started the day 4 shots off the pace, but made a quick move up the standings with 5 birdies over his first 8 holes. He finished out the first 9 with a bogey at number 9 for a 432. He missed a short birdie on number 14, but still recorded 3 more birdies on the backside to post 7 under par 65 for a total 11 under as the leader in the clubhouse. It was the best score of the day by 2 shots. He really played well on Sunday. Chappell was still on the course with birdie opportunities ahead of him, and he would need all of them. After a birdie at the par 5, number 14, he gave it right back with a bogey at the next. Now tied with Koepka at 11 under, standing on the 18th tee, he knew he needed birdie for the win. He made that birdie the old-fashioned way by knocking it to 8 feet from 88 yards with his third and rolling in the putt to collect the fancy boots and his first PGA Tour win. Chapel had only one top 10 and three missed cuts in his 13 starts prior to this week, but he is now a PGA Tour winner with an additional $1 million in his bank account, plus a new pair of fancy cowboy boots to show to his buddies. Kevin Tway and Tony Finau finished tied for third, and Aaron Baddeley had a good week collecting fifth-place money. Brandon Grace didn't go well for him on Sunday. He started the day one shot behind Chapel. He was expected to challenge for another trophy, but instead he faded with the final round 73. Grace's birdie on number two proved to be his last and only of the day, and he played the last 16 holes and two over to drop back into a tie for 10th. Kind of a side story at the Valor Texas Open. We talked a little bit about it last week. Ian Poulter was trying to earn back his full PGA Tour card by playing in his last event on his medical exemption, missed the cut, and is still just a little over 30,000 short of his full playing privileges. He will need to rely on a couple of more sponsors' exemptions later in the year to get back his full exemption going into next year. Carlos, that's all I've got on the Valero Texas Open. Did you get to watch any of it? What did you think of it?
I wasn't able to watch. I was really a little off of my home all weekend, but I read about it, and it was great to see that Kevin Chapel finally is a bridesmaid no more, right? And Brooks Koepka, he keeps knocking on the door, I mean, he's already a winner, but we know that he's rising up the rankings very fast. So I think he's going to have a great year this year, Brooks. So we're going to certainly be looking towards that. And this weekend he's going to be playing the Sears Classic with his brother. So that'll be interesting to watch how they match together there with the big pros. But hey, let's talk about the European Tour. We're Bernd Wiesberger. You remember him? He was one of your guys. And one from Austria. Finally, he beat England's Tommy Fleetwood there at the first hole of a sudden death playoff to win the Shenzhen International at Ganzhou Golf Club in China. The Englishman carded a superb final round of 63 to post a clubhouse total of 16 under. A number of players there had a chance to match him or better that number, but in the end, it was only Bernd Wiesberger who was able to tie Fleetwood's score. Wiesberger, he made great par saves on the 12th and then the 17th holes coming down the stretch, and then made another fine par on the last to force the extra holes. The pair headed to the difficult 18th to decide the tournament via playoff. Wiesberger then drove first and only narrowly carried the hazard. Fleetwood's drive was saved back to the left side, leaving a long shot to the green. His approach was reasonable, but it came up a good way short of the pin. Wiesberger, who had a difficult stance, took that aim and fired into within feet of the cup. After Fleetwood had missed his long birdie effort, Wiesberger calmly rolled his putt home and claimed his fourth European Tour title. In regulation play, Fleetwood carded the round of the day, a superb 63. He had a putt on the last to get in at 17 under, but left it just short. Ross Fisher was 16 under, coming to the last spot, three putted in the final green to finish one back in the tie for third with Gregory Bordy. Other notable finishes, hey, Thumbshot J.I.P., Thornbjørn Olsen, and Alexander Levy tied for eighth. Jerko Etzia of South Africa was also 16 under through 71 holes, but his drive on the last found the water and his second drive ended in the woods. He racked up a quadruple bogey 8 to fall right back down the leaderboard to a tie for 11. That one hurt. Kiradek Afidanra, he finished T21. Bubba Watson and Stephen Gallagher, T26. Jules Loiten, T29. And American Peter Uihlein in a tie with last week's playoff runner-up Paul Dunham for 33rd. And Eduardo Molinari, who won in a playoff last week over Paul Dunham, finishing 70th place. So from 1st to 70th. Some final notes here. This was Wiesberger's fourth European title in his 200th event on the circuit. It was his first victory since the Open de France in 2015. In three previous playoffs on the European Tour, Wiesberger had failed to get a win. This is the first time he went and won. And with this win, he moves off the way to 30th in the official World Golf Rankings from 43rd, in which he was. Tommy Fleetwood, he continues his fine season. Man, he's playing so good. He reminds me of Danny Willett last year and had closed the gap to Sergio Garcia at top of the Race to Dubai rankings. So far this season, Fleetwood has a win, which was in Abu Dhabi, 2 second-place finishes and a tie for third. He moved up into the top 30 of the official World Golf Rankings, just one above Brady Beesberger. He's 29th right now. And Ross Beecher, well, he was left to rue a poor first putt on the final green on Jameson Golf Club. He had looked a dead cert to join Fleetwood at 16 under, but he left his long birdie effort on the 18th well short of the hole and then narrowly missed the resulting par putt. By the way, Fred, Beesberger's victory over Fleetwood in a playoff was the third time, consecutive time, that the European Tour has gone into a playoff. So the last three tournaments in the 2017 Race to the Dubai there have gone on playoffs. Really interesting what is going on there in the European Tour.
Did you say that Beesberger, this is his 200th start? Did you say that?
That is correct, his 200th start.
I mean, that's like 8 years worth of, if you've been playing that long, it doesn't seem like it. Wow.
Yeah, that's right.
Wow. Time goes fast, I guess. Mm-hmm. Hey, Carlos, the old guys, the Champions Tour, were down by Branson, Missouri last weekend. The Bass Pro Shop's Legends of Golf at Big Cedar Lodge is always a fun event for the old guys. They get to pair up with their buddies, play a par 3 course, shoot some guns, and do a little fishing on the massive property at Big Cedar Lodge. DJ Singh, you remember him, paired up with the second coolest man in golf, Carlos Franco. And Team Franco and Singh posted the course record 12 under par on Sunday to rally from 7 shots back for the win. Franco and Singh finished at 15 under overall over the range shortened 36-hole tournament at the par 3 top of the rock course. They held off a trio of teams that finished a stroke back. The weather was definitely a factor as the players had to battle a windy, cold rain, as well as a difficult par 3 course designed by Jack Nicklaus. Heavy rain washed out Friday's opening round, and cold, misty conditions plagued the Saturday action. The weather cleared on Sunday to allow at least a 36-hole event. This was Singh's first official Champions Tour win, but the second for Franco. A stroke back at 14 under were first round leaders Jeff Sluman and Fred Funk, the winners of the tournament in 2014. The duo opened the tournament with a then course record 10 under on Saturday and finished tied for second with two other teams, Paul Goitis and Kevin Sutherland, plus Corey Pavin and Duffy Waldo. Pavin missed a 15 foot putt on the 18th. They were tied for the lead, but just didn't quite get down. Sluman birdied the 17th for a fifth birdie in a row for him and Funk to close within a shot of the lead, but that's as close as they could get. Also last week, the PGA Tour champions and Bass Pro Shops announced today that they're going to do a 4-year extension of the tournament, so look for it to be at Big Cedar Lodge through 2021. They're adding new courses. They're signing up for more Senior Tour action, Bass Pro Shops, Big Cedar Lodge. They got it going on down there, Carlos.
It's nice. It's nice to have the old guys, like you call them. They're not old. They're just mature guys.
No,
they're
old.
Pretty good. Those guys are
they're old. They're still pretty good, but they're old.
Okay. I won't continue. But hey, let's talk a little bit about the web.com tour. Yeah, if I contend that, I might get you compromised. So that's why I'm not really
confident. Okay.
So anyway.
I'm old.
Hey,
I agree. I'm old.
Yeah, on Sunday, D.H. Lee was crowned the 2017 United Leasing and Finance Championship winner. The 30-year-old South Korean finished the tournament at 6 under par. And he was able to hold off Jason Gore, who finished at 5 under. Lee shot at 2 over 74. Not good, but was just good enough to let Jason Gore for the top prize. Scott Langley and Roberto Diaz were tied for third place at 1 under. More than 150 players competed in this year's championship, which featured a $600,000 purse. all four rounds were televised by the Golf Channel, and the United Leasing and Finance Championship, you know, it has been held at Victoria National since 2012, but that venerable course proved to be one of the toughest golf courses on the web.com tour this past weekend, as Lee and Gore were two of only four golfers that finished under par. You know, this tournament title gives Lee his first web.com tour winning of his career, and along with that victory, he's going to be taking a $108,000 check. But there was some due to weather delays this weekend, you know, that final round wrapped later than expected, but luckily the tournament was able to complete all 72 holes before the sun went down on Sunday, but really that wreaked havoc on Saturday for the players. So some of that had to do at least with some of those scores, but wow, it was really like they were playing maybe a US Open or something like that. But one thing about the web.com tour is that the 25, which are the 25 that earned their card for next year in the PGA Tour, is taking shape. You know, DHC's victory on the web.com tour is the latest example of how one good week can make a world of difference as the golfers on the tour jockey for position to earn one of those 25 PGA Tour cards that are available at the end of this season. Lee's win moved him from 148th on the money list all the way to 6th. Andrew Putnam was the leader with his tie for 16th finish, stretched his lead on the top of the money list by nearly $50,000, and Kyle Thompson, the winner of the year's first event, moved from 4th to 2nd thanks to a 5th place at this tournament. Jason Bohr, thanks to his runner-up finish, was another big mover. He went from 65th to 10th. Scott Langley's T3rd helped him move from 98th to 24th. It's his first time in the top 25 this year. Five-time tour winner Jonathan Bird slipped into the 25, also for the first time this year, thanks to a T13 there at Victoria National. He moved from 34th to 25th. Fred, the rest of the 25 was shaken but not stirred, as everyone else who was in the top 25 prior to this week remained inside after Sunday's final pod drop. Any final words on this week in Braxton?
You know, I don't usually feel too sorry for tour pros because they're so good that, you know, it's hard to set up a golf course that they can't play or get around, you know, and around par or a little bit under. But I'm telling you what, the course in New York, you know, black, you know, where they play the U.S. Open. Bethpage, Zach, yeah, I'm sorry. Bethpage Black. And then this course, this Victoria place, looked like it was, I mean, it looked like it was, why would you build a golf course like that? I have no idea why anyone even built it. Why would anybody ever even go there and play? It was just off the charts. It's so hard. There's water everywhere. Oh, man, that was...
And there was rain more. And all that, so it was even more...
Yeah. Yeah. It was unbelievable. You know, if they were around par, and the leader was 6 under, that's... on that golf course, that's a heck of a score, because that is one difficult golf course, let me tell you. That's all I got, Carlos.
Well, with that, we'll wrap up our weekend backspin this week. The action of the major tours, the PGA Tour, will have the Zurich Classic, which, for the first time, it will be a two-man event, and this is the first time that it's happening on PGA Tour since the Walt Disney World National Team Championship in 1981. And there's going to be some great teams there to look forward. You know, it features 6 of the top 10 from the world ranking. That team of Justin Rose and Henrik Stenson represent the gold and silver medals from the Olympics. Some teams are based on corporate sponsors like Jason Day and Ricky Fowler. States like Jordan Spieth and Ryan Palmer from Texas, Tony Finau and Daniel Summerhays from Utah. Age and state like Steve Stricker and Jerry Kelly are from Wisconsin. Both are in their 50s. Or from countries like 2 teams from South Africa, South Korea, and Canada. Or blood like Brooks and Chase Koepka. You know, at least 9 teams are based on colleges, including 2 teams from Alabama and Georgia. No, there's not one from Ohio, Fred, sorry. And Kevin Chappell, who just won, is playing with Gary.
Jason Day's playing. Jason
but Bates that's
playing
from college.
With that other hack. He's from Ohio.
He's Australian, man. He said that he's leaving that as different.
We're claiming him.
He's
a Buckeye now.
On the PGA Tour, they're going to be very near home. They're going to be in my home, I mean. They're going to be in Irving, Texas, the Volunteers of America, the Texas Shootout, the defending champion, Jin Shin. You know, this tournament will feature a 36-hole cut to the top 70 players and ties, followed by the 54-hole cut to the top 50s and ties. Lexi Thompson plays for the first time since she was the winner, assessed a four-shot penalty for incorrectly replacing her ball at the A&A installation. So let's see how she is. So your view will be here. Julie Easter, she keeps playing with that. Ebe Park, who's a two-time champion, will be there too. So Lydia Ko, who turned 20. It's incredible. Only 20 on Monday. She will be playing as well. So we will, like usual, they will have a lot of great players there. So let's look out for that one. And the European Tour is going to be the Volvo China Open. Chinese players have won the last 2 years with Li Haotong and Wu Shun. So we'll see. It's in Beijing. Anthony Wall is making his 500th career start there. Ryder Cup captain Thomas Bjorn is playing on the sponsor's exception there. There's going to be a lot of good action there as well. A fairly good field, you can say, that is going to be there. Wiesberger, who just won, is going to be there as well. And on the web.com tour, they're going to Mexico on the El Bosque Mexico Championship. You know, they actually won the United Leasing Championship. Last year, your guy, Wesley Bryan, won this tournament, but he obviously is in the PGA Tour. So it's going to be good to see the web.com tour. And with that, we'll wrap up our four call. We'll look ahead. Any comments that you want to make about the upcoming tournaments before we move on to the par five meetings?
No, I'm kind of looking forward to the Zurich Classic. I like the idea of changing it up a little bit. I like to play two ball, two man games like that. We had a great match. Some guys when we were down at French Lick last week, and we had a great match at the P Dye course that we played two on two, and it was just a lot of fun. And I know these guys will enjoy it, and I think the golf fans will enjoy watching it on TV also.
Yeah, the best thing of this is that they are picking their teams. You know, they didn't want, like, okay, because you're ranked one and two or three and four, you're in the top ten, you can have them together. You know, so that'll make it better for the players because it's their choice of player that they're going with. And all those teams look like fun. I mean, it looks like it's going to be a really good tournament to watch. One thing that they are looking for, too, is that both members of the winning team will get 2 years extensions and spots in the PGA Championship and Tournament of Champions. Not the Masters, but hey, that's good enough, PGA Championship and Tournament of Champions. So 2 year extension, anybody. I mean, the good teams look like they should be on top, but anything can happen. Anything can happen, and especially there in Louisiana. The TPC Louisiana is not an easy course. It's really a good course where a lot of mix can be played there. It's not a bumper's place, but it's not only four shot makers. So it's going to be a very good tournament to watch. And if you want to watch it, Thursday and Friday is going to be on the Golf Channel, Saturday and Sunday, Golf Channel in the morning, and then in the afternoon it's going to be on CBS Sports. Well, with that, we wrap up our weekend backswing and our four call, which is a look ahead to this weekend's action. And now we're going to move into the par five news spread. And whoa, Tiger Woods, he had another surgery. What's the latest on Tiger? How fast are we going to see him play? What's going on with him?
I wouldn't hold my breath on that one, Carlos. I got a feeling this is just about does it. Last Thursday, Tiger Woods announced via his website that he had undergone successful back surgery to alleviate ongoing pain in his back and leg. He said the surgery went well. He was optimistic that it will relieve the back spasms and pain. When healed, I look forward to getting back to a normal life, playing with my kids, competing in professional golf, and living without the pain that he's been battling for so long. From the previous three surgeries, as well as other complications, Tiger's bottom lower back disc severely narrowed, causing severe pains in his back and leg. Conservative therapy, which included rehabilitation, medications, limiting activities, and injections, failed as a permanent solution, and Woods finally opted to have the surgery. The procedure was a minimally invasive anterior lumbar interbody fusion. I'm sure you know what that is. The surgery entailed removing the damaged disc and re-elevating the collapsed disc space to normal levels. This allows the one vertebrae to heal the other. The goal is to relieve the pressure on the nerve and give the nerve the best chance of healing. That sounds really wonderful to me, Carlos, and we certainly wish Tiger the best in his recovery and a full life going forward. But as golf fans, this sounds rather negative for ever seeing Tiger on a golf course, especially in the foreseeable future. You know, the golf swing, as we all know, requires turning of the upper body and creating a torque or a spring-like tension to especially the lower back. Forget the long recovery and rehabilitation time. Once the area is completely healed, Woods will have a limited range of flexibility in his lower back, which will restrict his golf swing, thus reducing swing speed and strength. Technically, I looked this up, Carlos. I went to the internet. I read this stuff. I feel like a doctor now. I'm not a doctor, but I stayed in a Holiday Inn Express last night. Technically, a spinal fusion surgery is designed to stop the motion at a painful vertebral segment, which in turn should decrease the pain generated from the joint. So they add, add a bone graft to a segment of the spine. They can cause the bone graft to grow between the two vertebrae so that they don't rub on each other. That will create a bone fusion. There's a couple other things, but I'm not going to bore you with all this stuff. But, you know, I know people that have had successful spinal fusion surgery, but they're not playing golf at any level, and they're certainly not trying to swing a driver at 125 miles per hour or gouge a 7-iron from USGA like 4-inch rough. And I am no doctor, that's for sure. But this pretty much sounds like the end of the Tiger Woods era in golf for me. It's a very sad day for me, Carlos. I really want to see him come back and do something. And, you know, maybe there's a chance 4 or 5 years from now, but, you know, he's going to be 46 years old, and it just doesn't look good to me, Carlos.
You know, I'm going to take the other route. I think it's good for him. And, it's funny because you went and researched all that. I have very close friends that have gone through vertebrae fusion surgery. Both are athletes, and both are playing at the top level. One is a volleyball one of them, and the other one is a baseball player. So a baseball player, you know, they swing the bat pretty fast as well. And it's constantly as well. So I think that he was looking, when he was trying to rehab on his own and trying to get this done his way, as usual, right? But this was like the last thing he wanted to do because, of course, there's going to be some degree of flexibility loss. That's for sure. And especially where it is, which is his lower back. But at least now he's pain-free, which is what he's saying, right? We have to take this all into with a grain of salt because we never know everything from him. That's why we never knew about this until now. But I think that if he's pain-free and he can adapt, because he's been anyway painful, his swing is not as explosive as it was when he was a younger guy. I think that he has been tinkering with his swing because of that, because he knows he has to adapt to his new limitation. Now, whether he will be again Tiger Woods of old, I don't think so. But I think he won't retire. I think that he will not return this year, but I think he will not retire. I mean, no golfer ever really retires. Other athletes retire so that they can play golf, and golfers just keep playing golf, right? Retirement in golf for superstars means just transitioning onto the PGA Tour champions and winning fewer commercials. So why would you hold a press conference or something like that, right? But he has too much to lose by making a formal announcement on this. And the future of him once again teeing it up and club twirling his way down the fairways at Augusta or St. Andrews feeds the machine that he is as a corporation. And that incentive to turn that off is not lofty, you know. And we can read through his statements, like when he said that when healed, I look forward to getting back to a normal life, playing with my kids, competing in professional golf, and living without the pain I have been battling so long. He looks like different from what he was saying before. Before he was like, oh, I don't know when this is going to get better. I don't know if it's ever going to get better. I have to take some time and all that. This is the first time that we really listened to him saying, I look forward to getting back to competing in professional golf. So he's really already feeling better if you read through that. Or what Mark Steinberg said, this is the best and only way to have a healthy, active lifestyle, be able to play with his kid, play golf, and not be in pain. You know, and then he said you can continue to try and do the Band-Aid approach, but if you want to that healthy, active lifestyle, it was recommended that this is the way to go at this point. And the doctor was very pleased with the result. Tiger kind of feels a weight off his shoulders as this is the path to recovery. So there's a very different language now from what it was before. Everything was doom and gloom before. When they were talking, and there was nowhere that you can hear them or listen from them that there was a future for them in any place, not even playing with his kids. Now you listen to that. So to me, I see there's a future for him. Whether that would be the Tiger of old or not, I don't think so, but we have to see. I mean, he's Tiger Woods, and at the end of the day, there was nobody like him in this generation. And We'll see. I totally disagree. I think he's coming back, not this year, next year, and he's going to be playing at a good level.
I hope you're right, Carlos, but I'm afraid I'm on the negative side on this one. I'm not very, I was pretty optimistic all along, but I don't know. This one, it just time is really working against him. That's all I got.
We'll see. I'm positive, and I think I can't wait to see at least more what he's saying in his language and what he's saying. I truly see a different language, and that's why I'm positive about it. I changed my mind from being negative about it to being positive now after this. So we'll see. But anyway, from one bad back to another one, Dustin Johnson, his comeback is still on track despite lingering pain and tightness in his back. BJ said in an interview that it's still a little bit bruised, but he was able to hit balls and that everything was pretty good. He mentioned that it's a little tight, but he can swing just fine. He was very happy with his practice session. He was hitting the ball very well. Hardly any issues, and he dared to say that it's about 85 to 90%. So the world number one, as you might remember, withdrew from the Masters prior to teeing off in his opening round a day after injuring his back in a fall on the stairs of his rental home. Johnson went through a full warm-up on the range, but ultimately he decided to withdraw only minutes before his tee time. Prior to pulling out of the Masters, Dustin Johnson had won in his three previous starts, so that's three. Still going. He's looking for his fourth when he comes back. But back then, it was a huge blow for fans, for golf fans, many of whom were hoping to watch the tournament favorite at 10th to win his second major championship and fourth straight event. Johnson, too, he was, of course, disappointed to be relegated to the sidelines. And he said that he watched as he was laying on the couch or in the bed, so he really couldn't do anything else. He didn't like watching, though. He said that was one thing he don't want to do anymore, and I don't blame him. I mean, he would rather be on the fourth plane than being the one that is watched on. Luckily for him, he doesn't have to wait much longer to get back in the mix. Last week, we reported that he announced his intention to return to competitive play at the World's Final with a championship, which is in May 4th to the 7th. That is next week. He had previously planned to take 3 weeks off after the Masters anyway, so that extra rest and recuperation turned out to be very well timed. He closed up that interview by saying that he felt good probably since about last Monday, that he has a few weeks off, so there was just no point in rushing anything. He just kind of took it easy, just been training a little bit, taking care of it, so he won't have any issues. Fred, that day was good. He hit balls all the way through the driver and was fine. So that was definitely very reassuring that DJ is really, his comeback is still on track, and he should be fine when he comes back.
Yeah, when you give yourself a jolt like that, though, Carlos, I mean, that can, you know, that can hang in there a while. He may experience some back pain or tightness or even some spasms throughout the rest of this year until it just finally, you know, maybe he gets some time to work and he really heal up really well. Even though, I mean, he's, what, 32, 33 years old? So he doesn't heal quite as fast as like a 20-year-old does. But, I mean, he still, you know, would heal pretty quickly. But still, even at that age, the muscles don't recover quite as fast. So I'm sure he's going to have some problems off and on yet. But he probably, my goodness, even if he's only at 80%, he's still better than most of the guys on tour. So good for him. Hey, the times, they be a change in women's golf. U.S. Sohan captain Julie Inkster held the first meeting of prospective team members last week in Houston, and a couple of stalwarts in past Solheim Cup competitions were not among the invitees. Inkster invited 16 players to the first team gathering at Blue Jack National Saturday and Sunday, a group that includes the top 14 in U.S. Solheim Cup points based on the standings at the conclusion of the ANA Inspiration. New young stars also invited were rookie Nelly Korda and veteran Beth Allen. Allen is a small surprise, as she's been playing primarily on the Ladies European Tour during her golf career, but by leading the 2016 Order of Merit and playing more in the U.S. this season, she put herself squarely in contention as a possible Solheim Cup member. Carlos, including Beth Allen, the Solheim Cup team, would be a wonderful story, and one that I'm going to be following very close. You know, we've had Beth on the show, you know, the story about giving her kidney to her brother, a kidney transplant, took, 4 or 5 months off of golf and then went back at it. She wasn't having success here in the United States. She went over to Europe. She's played over in Europe for several years, lives in Scotland primarily. So that's a great story. I hope that that comes to fruition. I just love that. Inkster said, "We could have a little bit different team this year. We could have some rookies, and I want to try to get them ready to go. I want to bring us together and go over what we're looking for." The Solheim Cup is just 4 months away. It's coming quickly. There are still 14 qualifying events, 3 of them major championships with double points, so that's going to really shake things up if some America finishes high on that list. Before the American team is finalized at the conclusion of the Ricoh Women's British Open, 2 weeks before the Solheim Cup, the top 8 U.S. women on the Rolex ranking will be chosen after that British Open. So, you know, I mean, it could happen that Paula Kramer, who's now 21 in the world, or Morgan Pressler, who's number 22, could jump up if they do well in a major or something, but it just doesn't appear likely. Other Solheim veterans that would require a captain's pick if the selection process ended today: Lizette Salas, Michelle Wee, Angela Stanford, and Christina Kim. Inkster finalized by saying, we still have a ton of tournaments. There's going to be a lot of shifting in points. You can't really predict who's going to be on the team. I just wanted a wide variety of people there. So that's the kind of way it worked out. Carlos, with the youth movement we are seeing in women's golf, it is time that the Solheim, the American Solheim Cup, bring in some new and younger faces. Very much looking forward to the Solheim Cup in Des Moines in August, Carlos, and just, you know, kind of building it up around here. We're looking forward to it here in Toledo for, you know, 4 years down the road also.
I don't know about that, really, because it's not that Paula and Morgan are that far right now in the rankings. I mean, I don't know. I'm not too sure I would go that route. And we're going to talk a little bit about the LPGA later on the show, so I'm going to hold my thought on whether they should go that route because they are veterans or not, but it's not like they're playing bad golf right now. And they are, they have been two stalwarts in the Solheim Cup. And would you rather do what the Ryder Cup European team did and went with all those rookies and see what happened and just lose because of that? I wouldn't do that. I'm not sure if that's the route they want to go. But I think that Paula and Morgan still have a lot to give. And, well, we'll see what they will do. But definitely, I wouldn't go that route. I wouldn't go that route.
You know what, Carlos? Anyway. I really have a hard time not having... If I were Inkster, I would really have a hard time not having Michelle Wee on the team. I don't care. If she's playing just even... halfway is decent over the next 2 months if she's just playing along pretty good. But Paula Kramer and Morgan Pressel really, they have not done that much at Solheim the last couple of times. I think I would be looking for some of the other girls myself. Of those three, I think Michelle Wee gets a captain's pick, but the other two do not.
Well, I don't think they're going to get it. If they were not part of this gathering, let's call it that way, I don't think they're going to get the call. I think they got the message, the memo like that. So, but I think they're making a very big mistake if they're playing bad, which they're not. They're just not doing – they're not top players right now. But that doesn't mean that you're going to leave those veterans out from what they have done already. That's the point. I mean, they're not doing that bad. That's why they're 21 and 22 right now. So it's not like they're 60 or 50 or even 40
right.
in the world.
Right.
So yeah. They're not that bad and they're not that low on the rankings. It's just that we haven't seen them win lately, but it's not like they're going out so far. So, of course, they have other priorities in life right now, but I don't know. We'll see how that pans out. We'll keep an eye on the Solheim Cup. But to me, no, they're not going to make the team. Because if they were not there, they're very difficult unless they really come out, like you say, and do something extraordinary the rest of the
year. They're going to have to win one of the majors to get in. That's just about it.
I don't think one of the majors. But
or two regular
something
events.
Like yeah, some regular events, and just get hot right now, the final couple of months. That would be the only way that they're going to make it, given the circumstances.
Three,
we'll see.
Three top fives or something like that, yeah.
Hey, we love here, and we know that. And professional golfer, Rory McIlroy, our boy here. He married his fiancée, Erica Stahl, at Ashford Castle in Colmaine, in Ireland, on Saturday. We talked about that last week. Multiple outlets were reporting that the Irish golfing ace and his American lady love got hitched in a lavish $250,000 wedding. What? $250,000? No, I can't believe that. That's too low. At the 13th century castle with a slew of celebs at their side, including Stevie Wonder, One Direction's Niall Horan, Ed Sheeran, 50 Shades of Grey's actor Jamie Dornan, and Coldplay's Chris Martin, as well as golfers including, who else? Sergio Garcia, Patty Harrington, and businessman and high-stakes gambler, J.P. McManus. I just hope he's not taking a page from Phil Mickelson's book on relationship with gamblers. We all know how that turned out. But anyway, well, on the other hand, well, maybe the couple is said to be preparing to fly to Barbados for a 10-day honeymoon in the McManus owned Sandy Lane Resort before McIlroy resumes his golfing duties. So maybe he was just kind of negotiating that suite there, but I don't know. Stevie Wonder and a 16-piece band is believed to have been performed during the Newlyweds nuptials. And he's right with his, like, I just called to say I love you. Isn't she lovely? And signed, sealed, and delivered. Yeah, it's no wonder why the Motown superstar is a tap for the A-list ceremony. Later that evening, Sheeran reportedly performed a special show for the duo and their guests. You know, I honestly think that $250,000 sounds like a little low for that wedding, and there are already reports that the final cost, which took place there in the Ashford Castle in Kong at the weekend, could be as much as 1 million euros. And he more than certainly can afford that, and not even recording his bank. I mean, after especially winning the FedEx Cup last year. However, that value at the star-studded nuptials to the hotel, the town, and the island of Ireland is likely to be substantially more. I mean, that story of him and the former PGA Tour employee marrying was covered in newspapers and websites all over the world, with most of the articles about what had been billed as the celebrity wedding of the year carrying multiple pictures of the castle and its environments to accompany stories, heaping praise on couples' choice of venue. That castle, the Galway Mayor Border, was given a 47 million euro makeover by its owners just 2 years ago, which added a spa, a pool, and a cinema to its 13th century charms. Before the weekend, it had been hovering up accolades, and last autumn, Ashford Castle was named Ireland's best five-star hotel at the AA Hospitality Awards. I mean, according to Tourism Ireland, estimates positive media exposure about Ireland last year was worth an estimated 385 million euros in equivalent advertising value. You know, if the McIlroy Stahl Union generates just a tiny percentage of that amount, its reward to the tourism sector will almost certainly outstrip its cost to the newlyweds. But Fred, we can only wish Rory and Erica the best and may their marriage, like it said, last till death do you part.
$250,000 sounds a little light to me. That would be about what Stevie Wonder would want just to come over there to sing and play a little bit. He's got to get a pretty good. He's not coming over there for less than $100K. I'm sure of that, and it's probably more. So, and then you got Sheeran in there, and I know Sheeran and Neil, what's them called, they're buddies with Rory, but still, I don't know. They're pros. They're not performing unless they're getting paid. So, I don't know. That had to be a bunch of money in that thing. But you know, he gets what? He gets 200 mil. He gets a 20 mil a year from Nike, and he wins another 10 or 12 million a year in purse, so that's 30, and he gets another 15 or 20 mil in other endorsements, so he gets 40, 50 mil a year. I think he can afford it. Probably could write it off, probably. Hey, Carlos, this topic's going to take a while, so you can, I mean, if you want to take a nap or something, I mean, because this is going to take a minute. And then there was more came out today that I had to add to it. So, you know, there is more activity right now with the rules of golf than at any time in the history of the game, I think. This modern digital video technology has forced rules officials and tour executives to take a long, hard look at how the game is assessing penalties after the fact and the implementation of new rules historically only issued every 4 years. They made them happen today. Yeah, none of this waiting for 3 or 4 years here. This stuff's effective today. So let's talk about handicap first. So the USGA and the RA are trying to work together along with the National Golf Associations from Australia, Great Britain and Ireland, the European Golf Association, South Africa, the Argentine Golf Association, plus There's always been a lot of discussion with that. The joint committee is led by the USG and the RNA, and it's also been formed. They've got representation from Japan and Canada, and they're going to announce new proposals later this year. USGA Executive Director Mike Davis said one wonderful aspect of golf that separates from other sports is the opportunity for players of differing abilities to play on an equitable basis through handicapping. With one global system, golf courses will be rated and handicaps calculated in a consistent manner everywhere in the world, removing borders to provide an easy way to play together is a great for the game and golfers everywhere. Martin Slumbers weighed in. He said, we've been concerned for some time that many golfers find the handicapping landscape to be complicated and frustrating, and they wanted to make sure that it worked for all parts of the world. So they're working on that. Okay. So let's get to the real meat of the stuff here. So today, just today, with what can only be called lightning speed for the USGA and the RNA, they changed the rules of golf by enacting a decision intended to limit the use of video review and the game's governing bodies hope stem from the tide of rulings prompted by viewers calling in infractions. The change goes into effect immediately. It's going to apply to players teeing off this week in the Zurich Classic, the LPGA's Volunteers of America Texas Shootout, and the European Tour's Bobble China Open. Reading from the text of the press release that we received from the USGA, the USGA and the RNA have issued a new decision on the rules of golf to limit the use of video evidence in game effective immediately. The two organizations have also established a working group of LPGA, PGA Tour, PGA European Tour, Ladies European Tour, and PGA of America representatives to immediately begin a comprehensive review of broader video issues, including viewer call-ins, which arise in the televised competitions. The new decision, which is number 34-3/10, implements two standards for rules committees to limit the use of video. Number one, when video reveals evidence that could not reasonably be seen with the naked eye. That's going to be hard to discern sometimes. Number two, when players use their reasonable judgment to determine a specific location when applying the rules. The first standard states, the use of video technology can make it possible to identify things that could not be seen with the naked eye. An example includes a player who unknowingly touches a few grains of sand in taking a backswing with a club in a bunker when making a stroke. That's the Nordquist rule from last year. If the committee concludes that such facts could not reasonably have been seen with the naked eye and the player was not otherwise aware of the potential breach, the player will be deemed not to have breached the rule, even when video technology shows otherwise. Charles, I think that's really good. That would be the thing with the Dustin Johnson too. That would yeah. Fall into that. Yeah. You got a comment there?
No. I was just holding myself from laughing because they might have been listening to our show or something. Because that right there, I hope it stops people from calling whatever number it is or emailing whoever it is. You know, stop. It's not your call. If it wasn't, it's like we have always been saying, if it wasn't seen on the course, forget about it. Either put more people there or whatever, but don't be calling or trying to go back. There's no instant replay here. I think that's a great thing right now, and I'm really happy that came through. And I'll come in afterwards after you're done in half an hour. So.
Sure. No problem. The second thing, I just was talking for quite a while. I just wanted to make sure that we got in what you wanted to get in.
I'm telling you.
The second standard applies when a player determines a spot, point, position, line, area, distance, or other location in applying the rules and recognizes that a player should not be held to the degree of precision that can sometimes be provided by video technology. Examples include determining the nearest point of relief or replacing a lifted ball. So, you know, that we had that with Tiger at their Masters, back a couple years ago. Now we just had it with Lexi putting her ball back on her mark. Yep. So that's where all that comes in. So, you know, they've addressed these things, Carlos. As we reported, Michael Wan pretty much laid it on the table during the meeting of the five major organizations that control golf, that run golf around the world, and primarily the USGA and the RNA that set the rules for the world of golf, that this has got to change. This video replay stuff is out of control. And he spoke for the general populace of the golfing public. I was in meetings all weekend with other golf writers and golf media people from all over the Midwest. And to a person, everyone disagrees with what's going on and how these are the video replays being used. You know, it's just, yeah, if a player makes a mistake and breaks a rule, you got to do something about it, but not a day later, 24 hours later, and then penalize them for that when they thought it was, that whole thing was so stupid. So, Carlos, I'm going to shut up now and let you talk about this for whatever comments you may have, but I'm really happy that they've done something. I don't think this is all of it. I think there's more to come. The USGA, I was talking to, matter of fact, I was talking to Mike Nichols from the LPGA and the Sumatra Tour today. Mike Nichols actually runs the Sumatra Tour for the LPGA. I was talking to him today, and he says, you know, the USGA is fine, you know, but they interpret the rules to the letter of the rule. They do not feel they have any leeway. It's all black and white with them. There's no gray. With video replay, you bring in a lot of gray. And so if you want them to use a video replay, then they have to use it to enforce the rule. If you don't want them to use a video replay, then they're not going to use the video replay. So there's still some issues up in the air here. This does not solve everything, but hopefully, it takes care of a few things for the time being. Carlos, you're on mute. Hello? Carlos, I lost you.
I am here, back. I got kicked out. I don't know if you...
Blog Talk shut you off, see?
they didn't want me to talk, and I thought it was you who should have been stopped.
I don't know what else you were saying afterwards,
but I just summed up real quick. Okay.
I just summed
just
up real quick
where,
that
where I was,
this is not all the rules changes that are coming. There's probably more, and that the USGA cannot do anything only in black and white. If you don't want them to use video replay, they have to shut it off. They can't have it see a rule broken and not do something about it. So there's more coming down from this yet, but this is just a quick Band-Aid.
Well, at least I think it's an important step. It's a first step, right? Maybe steps like you said, until they really do take either the complete thing of the video out of play, not to shut it off, but just really not start using it. Because the thing is that they're going to be doing the replays, and then the commentators are going to start saying, see, he moved it, or like in the Ananarchist, see, it moved a grain of sand. It moved a grain of sand. What? I mean, if they keep doing that, then there's no point to all this, because then people will be like, see, she should have been disqualified, or she should have been docked a point, or she did it that way. They really have to shut everything up. Not because the people would like to see replays, but the thing is, stop any commentary or anything that has to do with this. That's the first thing that has to happen. Because otherwise, we're going to continue to go over the same things over and over again. But one thing that I liked is that today, of course, when you were talking about Michael Wan, and the LPGA already released a statement regarding that, and they said that they were pleased that they expedited this important decision, and they applauded their efforts to provide for guidance in that, and they were encouraged by that they will continue to live those rules. Of course, like you said, through that collaborative group, a working group that includes the LPGA, and they are really going to put him, of course, in play immediately at the Volunteers of America Texas Cheetah this week. But I think it's baby steps, but it's a good thing that we finally are seeing some common sense that we thought it was lost on the golf's governing bodies.
I agree. But like I say, I this is a great first step, just like you say. I think you're right. I think there's going to have to be more. And the USGA, I mean, they look down a tunnel. They have tunnel vision. They don't see all the other stuff around it. They just see the rules and faction. And if they see it, then they have to do something with it. So I don't know how they're going to get around it all for all time. But I just know there's going to be more coming, Carlos.
And we'll be on top of each and every one of them in report and comment, as we have been always saying, especially about this subject, that we can make the whole show about it. But let's keep moving and talk about, we have been talking about a lot of injuries and things and people ill and all that. And sometimes injuries are straightforward and easy to explain, like falling down the stairs at the Masters, right? Like what happened to TJ. That's easy. Sometimes they're not. Like last week on Tuesday, when Jimmy Walker, he revealed that he recently tested positive for Lyme disease and has been struggling to cope with the condition since before his diagnosis. Per Mike McAllister of the PGAtour.com, doctors discovered the disease after Walker underwent testing one day before the 2017 Masters began. Walker did note he has not yet started taking medication for the disease while doctors go over additional blood tests he had taken on Monday, which would allow him to play in last week's Valero Texas Open, a tournament he won 2 years ago by 4 strokes over then supernova hot Jordan Spieth. He said that he heard that the medication can take it out of you pretty bad for 4 or 5 days, and that anybody that knows him, rest isn't really something he's really good at doing. So, you mean he has been discreetly fighting on his own battle off the golf course, but he said that he intends to keep playing golf as long as his body will allow him. I think that's wrong. He should take the rest out and try to get better as soon as possible. But, hey, that's how he feels. He first began developing symptoms around Thanksgiving when McAllister noted that he was battling fatigue, loss of strength, and irritability. And even though Jimmy did say he's not blaming his performance, relative to how he's played in recent seasons, to the symptoms, it's really hard not to draw the through line for him, you know. Walker has been plagued for months by lethargy and dampened enthusiasm, and his game has really shown. He won the PGA Championship last year, his first career victory in a major, but has not won in the PGA Tour since. He has just one top 10 in this tour season, and that was in the tiny field event of the Tournament of Champions to start the calendar year when he finished T9. He finished tied for 18th at the Masters 3 weeks ago, and on Wednesday at the Valero Open, he opened up about his fight with a disease that he did not see coming. And as he did, that set off something of an alarm among the fantasy obsessives of the world. Enter Jimmy's wife, Erin, who took them to task, and rightfully so. His wife rightfully called out everybody more worried about their fantasy teams than his health after that announcement. I'm going to read you both tweets that Erin Walker gave. And the first one says, as my husband said in his Valero Texas Open presser, he's battling newly diagnosed Lyme. Proud of him for battling so hard during this. And the second one said, Jimmy Walker is dealing with a serious illness and people are more concerned with their fantasy lineup. File that under the dash WTF. Well said, Erin. Well said. All of you should be more concerned about somebody's health than your freaking team, really. That that I'm really upset as well. So, Fred, let's just all hope and wish that Jimmy experiences a speedy recovery and he's back contending off the leaders, the leaderboard soon, since we know he's very capable.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. He's, you know, he's had a couple of really good years coming off a major win last year, and this could have been another big year for him. But, you know, if you're not in top physical condition, I mean, it's tough out there, and especially if you're just tired and you don't have the energy. So, it's got to be a tough thing going through it. So, but I just hope he gets all right. Hope it turns out well for him.
And with that, we'll wrap up our Part 5 news. Now, let's take it now to the practice range, the topic of the week. We're going to be talking now about the LPGA. We're going to do a recap of what has happened so far. And as you all know, there has been few tournaments so far, but there has been already a major championship. The first one of the year was the Pure Silk Bahamas LPGA Classic. We saw there Brittany Lincecum win, and we saw a lot of Americans. Actually, the top five finishes there, Brent Lincecum, Lexi Thompson, Stacey Lewis, Serena Piller, Lily Korda, also Austin Ernest. So now, we know that there were a lot of the top players that skipped that to play the second one. But, hey, Brittany Lincecum came on top, Lexi Thompson there, the Americans. Which is one thing that we have noticed this year. There has been a lot of more Americans topping the leaderboards, at least showing up among the top 10 and the top 20 that in previous recent years. The second one, which was the ISDS Handa Women's Australian Open, that's when Hannah Yan won. There was a lot of good players there. The top players started playing. Adi Aitana, and they're finishing a T3rd, EJ Lee, and Haru Nomura. Sarah James Smith also was third. Beth Allen, there she finished a T7. We can go and say, hey, Hannah, finally, that was one of the youngsters that won in the tournament. Then came the one that had the whole full force of all the top players there, which was the Onda LPGA Thailand, which was the third one. Amy Yang won there. Soyeon Ryu, which we're going to talk a little bit about as well. She finished second. Seyeon Kim was third. Lexi Thompson again, another top five. So she finished T4th. She's having a great year. Indy Chan there. Danielle Kang. Lydia Ko finished T8th. Ari Aitanaren was T8th as well in that tournament. After that, we had the HSBC Women's Champion, which was won by Ebi Park in her second. Her first full start, she really won this tournament incredible with a record-setting tournament score on the final round of 64 there in the golf course. Adi Aitanaren was second. Song Hyun Park, which is my pick already, and she's leading the Rookie of the Year class by a long shot. She finished third. Brooke Henderson, which really has been not much heard about her. She finished at T4. Hannah Yang, another T4. Michelle Wee was there, also top five in the T4. Michelle is having a good year. Soyeon Ryu, another top 10. She's really consistent, and she's rising up the leaderboards and the world rankings. After that, the Bank of Hope Founders Cup. Anna Nordqvist, she won there by two shots over Indy Shawn, Adi Aitanaren, and Stacey Lewis. Hannah Yang, another top five. She, there are Inbi Park, Soyeon Ryu, another top five as well. Maria Aitanaren was T8. Lydia Ko was T8. And if you see the pattern that we're going, Adia and Lydia, the top two players until last year, have not been showing up that much in the top 10. They're picking up here and there, but you don't see that mentioning of them. Then on the next, which was the Kia Classic, Meeting Lee won. Soyeon Ryu, second. Austin Ernest, Jarena Piller, Song Hyun Park, Karini Kerr, then Christy Kerr, Lee Young Her, Shan Shan Fang, and Yi Shang. No sign of Adi Aitanaren or Lydia Kell. Then the next tournament, the A&A Inspiration. We already talked about Lexi Thompson. We all know she should have won this, but hey, that's the rules. That's how it was. Soyeon Ryu, hats off to her. She played consistently, stayed throughout, solid, and she won that tournament. In a playoff, Lexi finished second. Min Jae Lee, another great outing. She was T3rd. Ingby Park and Susanna Peterson, along with her. Michelle Wing was sixth. Christy Kirk, who's having a great year as well, finished seventh. Amy Young, eighth. Aria Yatano, and then finished T8th. And Karini Kerr round up the top 10. And on the last one, Christy Kerr, the veteran, finally, she was knocking on the door. She finally won. And in record-setting fashion as well, she shot at 62 on Saturday, which really catapulted her to the lead. And from there, she took off. Lydia Ko, finally, we see her. She finished strong that weekend. She started with 73, but then 65, 64. Inge Schoel, Sonyeong Young, Alena Sharp, Soyeon Ryu on the 6th, Stacey Lewis, Adia Itanoran in 7th, and Catherine Kirk and Daniel Kang and Sydney Clanton rounded off the top 10. Fred, that's about what's going on, how they have finished in the first seven tournaments here. One thing that I just mentioned is that Aria and Lydia, first, they have not won this year so far, which is something they got us used to. As you see, their top 10s and appearing there in the leaderboards have been only twice for each one of them in this year so far. So are we expecting too much from them? Is it something going on with them? Also, I have to mention the resurgence of Soyeon Ryu. Annika Sorensen said in an article I was reading that she said, you know, she's a very solid player. She makes very few mistakes and has very few weaknesses in her game. Consistency is what drives that stat. So we can say safely about Soyeon Ryu that if you look up consistent in the dictionary, you should see her face there in the picture. She continues to shine on the course, adding another top 10, our top 10 to an already impressive list. She has amazed 25 top 10s, including one win in 50 LPGA Tour events, which is her last 50. So she recently picked up her first win since at the ANA Inspiration. She's playing incredible. And the other thing that I want to comment to you about is, you know, take the winner so far. Brittany Lincecum, she's 31 years old. Hannah Yang, 24. Amy Yang, 27. Ingby Park, 28. Anna Nordqvist, 29. Liam Lees, 26. Soyeon Ryu, also. And Christy Carr, 39. That makes the average winner's age 28.75 so far. So would that be that we're seeing a resurgence of the veterans? I mean, you look at, I just mentioned all the top 10 there, and there was a lot of veterans finishing in the top 10. So would it be that is happening now, like it happened on the PGA Tour, where the veterans are winning more than the youngsters again? Is that would be a good thing or a bad thing? So I'm going to stop for now and turn it over to you.
You know, we are kind of in a little different situation with the LPGA Tour this year. You know, for the last 2 years, we've been talking about the younger players, especially led by Lydia Ko, who was a teenager. And as we documented earlier, she turned 20 this week. So no longer a teenager, but you know, one of the things that I came up with is, you know, we thought about this was that are we being too hard on Lydia Ko that she isn't winning this year? I'm looking here at the chart of the Rolex rankings, and Lydia has been falling since July of last year, so that right now, Lydia Ko, Soyeon Ryu, who is number two, and Aria Yatagon, who is number three, they're basically in a dead heat. So it's going to be interesting the rest of this year who is going to climb back on top of that number one ranking. Lydia still has it, and she can easily jump back and you know, make a bigger gap if she could throw in a couple wins. But there just seems to be a lot of indecision in her camp right now. You know, she got away from David Ledbetter last year, which you and I both agree probably was a good thing. She's going with Gary Gilchrist, who has helped a lot of players be very successful. Gilchrist is working with both Lydia Ko and Aria Yatagon currently. All the caddy changes, what's going on with that? I mean, it's not unusual for pro golfers to change their caddy. That's not unusual, but, you know, 9 caddy changes in, 4 years? That seems like a lot. She did keep Hamilton for a long time. But you know, I don't know. This is this guy she's got now. He was the Godfrey. He was the he won the popularity contest for all the other LPGA pros last year. So maybe he'll be the guy that can help lead Lydia back to the winner's circle. Maybe, I don't know. But you know, more concerning to me, quite honestly, and you didn't even mention Stacey Lewis. You know, Stacey's in a different place in her life right now. She got married, and she seems to be very happy. And if she doesn't win, it's not going to kill her, I guess. Paula Kramer, I think, is kind of in that same situation right now. They've got other things off the golf course that they have that takes their time, and they're not as into the golf as maybe they are, or being number one, being the best that maybe they were before. It's kind of like we saw with Yanni Tseng. You know, once she got there, this is nice, and then just kind of fell off the charts. So Christy Kerr winning was interesting to me. That she can still pop up and win every once in a while. She is a heck of a player. There's just no question about it. And she must have a really big will to win, because she stays out there and competes. She's not as long as some of the other girls. And she's got a really good all-around game. The person I really like to watch of the whole group that you talked about, So-Yeon Ryu, you talk about consistency. Lydia Ko was the most consistent over the past 3 or 4 years, and that's consistently winning and consistently finishing top five. Well, So-Yeon Ryu really isn't very far behind her. The only So-Yeon just didn't win quite as much, but she was always top 10, just time after time after time. Very, very steady, very, very solid golfer. In-Gee Chun, I like this player very much. I think she's going to go on to do great things the rest of the year. She just keeps getting a little bit better, a little bit better. The girl you like, Park, she's a really solid player too. Again, another player from Korea. We don't talk about Hana Yang very much, but she's already has a win this year. She had, two or three wins last year. She's pretty solid. About the only thing left on her agenda that she needs probably is a major or two to be put in the classification with the other one. And the last one, I guess I should mention Rio. She hasn't won this year. Is that a big deal? I don't know. She's had some good finishes. She's doing okay. She's still number three in the world. She fell behind So-Yeon Ryu. But the one that really surprises me the most is Brooke Henderson. What's happened to Brooke? I can see her missing a week or two, but she pretty much has not done anything this year. You mentioned in your comments. I look for Brooke to turn this thing around. I look for her to win a major or two and really, because she just has that fiery temperament. She needs something to get her going, to fire her up. She doesn't play her best until it's really the heat of the competition or something's on the line. And I look for her to get it going, to find something that'll really kickstart her. But, Carlos, the LPGA Tour in general so far for this year, I think they're off to a really good start. I think it's great that some of the veteran players have jumped back in and gotten some wins. The younger women are still there. They're still playing very well. They just haven't found the winner's circle. And, we're only 8 tournaments in. So there's still, another 26 or something like that to go. So, yeah. So, I mean, it's a ways to go yet. So, we've got a long season. We're only one major in, and we're not quite to the summer yet. So I just look for great things from the LPGA. I can't wait for the Marathon Classic. They'll be having a media day here in a couple weeks, and Lydia will be in for that. I was up to the Volvic media day today up at Ann Arbor. They've got some great stuff going on to promote that tournament this year. They're really high on that tournament. The Meyer Classic is over at Grand Rapids in our area here. So I get an opportunity to see some of the LPGA Tour right here close to home, and we can go visit and watch them. It's still a good product. and I hope more and more people watch it, because I really enjoy watching the women play. I think they really do a great job, and to see some of the veterans come back and compete against the younger women and taking some of those trophies, that's pretty interesting, Carlos.
Pretty interesting, and we've always said the LPGA is a very interesting tour, and it's getting even more interesting because, like we mentioned, the veterans are getting back into it, and it's just not only the youngsters, also now the veterans playing, so it's good to see that mix. I always like the mix. I don't like either one of the sides to have the dominance. I would like to see everything, because that's what really brings more people into it, because when you start separating, this is a youngsters game, then only the youngsters are going to be in there. The older people are going to say, that's for youngsters, I'm not even going to watch. So when you have that mix and there's a possibility of both having been there, that's when you attract more people, really. It's not either when you go for the veterans or you go for the youngsters. When you have both of them included, that's when you really grow the game, and that's when you really bring more people into it. But like you mentioned, yeah, Brooke Henderson and Charlie Hull, she has never also reached that peak that we thought she was going to reach. She pops in right here and there, but she really hasn't gone there. And that's another one that I'm really surprised at her performance so far. So
yeah,
anyway,
good point there. I completely overlooked her. Yeah, that was a good point. I completely overlooked her.
Yeah, now this weekend I'm looking for Jarena Pillar to see if she finally wins her here in her hometown in Irving, Texas. Let's see if she finally breaks through. She's been closing the gap there. There's nothing in the door. So that's one player I'm going to be looking forward to see playing good here at home in Texas. Well, with that, we'll wrap up our practice range where we give you a recap of what has happened so far on the LPGA and their players and what is going on, what we look forward to. Now we're going to go now to our final pods, and I'm going to talk about something that I know, a place I know very well, which is the sister island there for Puerto Rico. It's in Dominican Republic. The every year, you know, Pro Golfers hope to make the jump from the minor leagues to the majors. But now there's a tournament that is getting that same shot. And we're talking about the Corales Punta Cana Resort and Club Championship event on the web.com tour that will become a PGA Tour event next year when it's played opposite to the WGC Dell Technologies Match Play from March 22 to the 25th. According to the PGA Tour, the new tournament will have a purse of at least $3 million and will award 300 FedEx Cup points, which is like the Puerto Rico Open, which plays outside of the one that is in Mexico. So the WGC that is in Mexico, meaning that a victory won't include a spot in the Masters under the current structure for the year's first major championship. That is similar to other opposite events, field events, and they're currently in the PGA Tour, and that comes, like I said, comes to mind, the Puerto Rico Open. The contract is for the event to be held for 4 years, and will be the first time a PGA Tour stop will be held in the Dominican Republic. And to me, knowing there, the Punta Cana Resort is maybe the best resort there in Dominican Republic, but I don't think that the Corrales is the best place where you can play there. But it's a good place anyway. That tournament started in 2016 last year and will be played again next month before making the jump to the PGA Tour in 2018 for it.
Couple of things here, Carlos, to close out. The Hall of Fame is going to open up a new Players' Championship exhibit. If you're looking for a reason to visit the World Golf Hall of Fame in St. Augustine, Florida, it will open a new exhibit in May that will highlight the Players' Championship and the Players' Stadium course at TPC Sawgrass. It will be in a 1,500-square-foot space in the museum, give guests an interactive history lesson on the PGA Tour signature tournament, displays honoring multiple winners such as Jack Nicklaus, Fred Couples, Davis Love, and Tiger Woods, and the history of the Pete Dye design course. Annika Sorenstam, the Annika Foundation is involved with a ton of good stuff, and she seems to be always busy doing something, but it recently announced their continued support of the AJGA by extending their commitment to the Annika Invitational, which is an invitation-only event featuring the top junior female golfers from around the world through 2020. This is a great event, really nice to see this. Other pros have jumped in or are sponsoring AJG events. So many pros on the PGA Tour, the LPGA, played in the AJGA when they were growing up. So nice to see them continue to be involved in that. And Carlos, that's all I have for April the 25th, 2017.
Well, Mac Niners, that will wrap up another week of the Mac Niners Report. Thank you for listening. It's always our pleasure to bring you the latest on the world of golf. Don't forget to join us again next Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time here on Blog Talk Radio. Or, if you missed it, hey, check it out on iTunes or TuneIn. Also, remember, there is no way you can see us now. That's on Roku TV. So if you have Roku, go there. If not, go get Roku and go see us. And if you haven't done so, hey, follow the show on Twitter. ID is at Back9Report with the number 9 in the middle. My name is Carlos Torres. Along with Fred Alvader, we always wish you to be happy, be blessed, and enjoy the great game of golf. Happy golfing, everybody.
Good night, everybody.
Napa Know How.
A Napa guy knows more isn't always better, unless we're talking about full-size vans. These beasts do more than get you from A to B. They have so much space a man can live in it. With shag carpeting, waterbed, and a sweet lava lamp, these mobile abodes have all the comforts of home. With quality parts and plenty of Napa know-how, you can keep the original tiny house running longer, stronger. That's Napa Know How.
Napa Know How.